Good evening and welcome, everyone. Let us begin in the name of the Father and of the Son and in the name of the Holy Spirit. Amen. We gather this evening, as always, to open the new. We know that our shared intention and directed attention matter. It serves our work. It serves humanity. It serves all creation. So we consciously and intentionally place ourselves under the canopy of the work and the conscious circle of humanity. And we receive being food. May we also provide being food for the entire world and serve the unity of being. Tonight's open passage comes from a very special person, one who was very special to me personally and to many, Joseph Boyle, who was the abbot of St. Benedict's Monastery and whose authority Thomas Keating was under. And though Thomas Keating wrote 30 books and was famous around the world, Abbot Joseph wrote no books, and he was famous among a number of people, however, for his great love and his great light. So I'd like to take just a little bit longer this evening to read to you something which was not written by him, but from an interview by a Belgian filmmaker that was done in 2016, who came to St. Benedict's Monastery actually to publish a book about Thomas Keating, but ended up also conducting an interview with Abbot Joseph. Joseph's birthday is June 14th, so he would have been 80, a very young 80 in heart and spirit. So this is what the filmmaker had to say in her excerpt about Joseph. "Yesterday, I saw Venus coming home," Abbot Joseph said to me at the start of the interview. "I don't often see this brightest of all planets because we go to bed before the stars come out. The reason is that we rise at 4 in the morning for our first silent meditation. But yesterday, as I was returning from a visitation to Georgia, a spectacular Venus accompanied me on my way back. With my first question about the planet Venus, I was obviously touching upon a cherished subject of the abbot. Awe-inspiring, he tells me, this beautiful cosmos we are living in, and which we call home, God's home. Coming home is what becoming a monk has meant to him. As a teenager living in New York City, he hadn't seen a lot of stars or planets, but in this monastery, situated in a spectacular valley, high in the Rockies, he had for the first time seen the Milky Way, massively bright in the cold Colorado skies. Moreover, in coming to Snowmass, he had woken up to nature and found God in it. At first, he had some reservations in speaking about his spiritual homecoming, but I was fortunate to be able to prolong my stay at the Magic Monastery for a few days. On my last evening, he talked more freely, as the cameras were already on their cross-Atlantic way home. But my little voice recorder wasn't, and he was prepared to answer my intrusive questions. How did it happen? How has his life been transformed? As a boy doing a visit to his brother in a monastery, he had been impressed by the rows of monks bowing in silence. So he decided to become one himself. As we filmed him doing his favorite job, driving a bulldozer on the farm and enjoying it tremendously, a deep sense of connection with the transcendent could be felt. When I insisted on a concrete answer to my question, of how a life can be transformed, he replied in the most modest yet authentic way possible, "I try to be as selfless as I can be. It's all very simple, but that's how God is for me, and that's what I want to be, a place where God can dwell and his love can spread through me. I know God's love for me, and I trust in his mercy." Thank you, Joseph. May your loving influence be a stimulus for our work in building a house where God can dwell. Because we know that if there is someone that is surely in the conscious circle of humanity, it is you. And we feel privileged to have a direct connection. Thank you. And so now, abiding in that place of peace, knowing that we're looked after and cared for by so many countless beings in realms that we only can imagine, we place ourselves in the imminent trust and receptivity to these higher influences pouring down upon us, emanating from the spirit through the conscious circle of humanity. We do not have to think about it. We simply have to be aware and allow. And thus we prepare ourselves to receive. With back upright, strong back, heart open, wide open, mind in directed attention, we breathe together. We breathe in from every most hidden part of our being, all being together, everything. Everything that is hurt, that seems dark or fearful, harsh, shameful, ugly, irreparably damaged, diseased, unforgiving and unforgivable, wounded, resistant, apathetic, everything. And we hold it and lift it as an offering, transubstantiate it in our being as whole, as lovely, as radiant in light. We do this on behalf of everyone and everything, those who are asleep and those who are awake. And we breathe out this healing light into the world, all worlds, as food. We hand over the complexities of this day, the plans for tomorrow, the anxieties and small fears of our hearts. We lay down our constructed life and yield to the unfolding divine human life. And we stand unencumbered before God and one another. And we prepare to enter into the time of Lectio Divina, a time of prayer and silence and reflection. Our passage, as always, will be read three times. You have placed your truth in the inner being. Therefore, teach me the wisdom of the heart. Forgive all that binds me in fear, that I may radiate love. Cleanse me that your light may shine in me. Fill me with gladness. Help me to transform weakness into strength. Look not on my past mistakes, but on the aspirations of my heart. For I wish to penetrate deeply into myself and see what is here and beyond, to have no fear of any kind, not of failure nor of suffering, and above all, not fear of death. You have placed your truth in the inner being. Therefore, teach me the wisdom of the heart. Forgive all that binds me in fear, that I may radiate love. Cleanse me that your light might shine in me. Fill me with gladness. Help me to transform weakness into strength. Look not on my past mistakes, but on the aspirations of my heart. For I wish to penetrate deeply into myself and see what is here and beyond, to have no fear of any kind, not of failure nor of suffering, and above all, not fear of death. You have placed your truth in the inner being. Therefore, teach me the wisdom of the heart. Forgive all that binds me in fear, that I might radiate love. Cleanse me that your light might shine in me. Fill me with gladness. Help me to transform weakness into strength. Look not on my past mistakes, but on the aspirations of my heart. For I wish to penetrate deeply into myself and see what is here and beyond, to have no fear of any kind, not of failure nor of suffering, and above all, not fear of death. Amen. You are invited now, as you are moved to do so, to share what you receive from this passage, or perhaps what you received from gazing upon this extraordinary image, or what moved you in the silence. Rebecca, please.
The phrase that caught my attention was, "Forgive all that binds me in fear." I am not sure how to interpret that, and I will spend some time contemplating it. That's all.
Yes, yes, it is rather provoking, is it not?
It is.
Yes. Thank you, Rebecca. Steve, please.
Well, what came to mind to me was like those kids movies, the enchantment movies, it's like a treasure hunt to finding yourself. And so something's been implanted deep in me, divinely planted deep in me, and we're off on a journey deep inside to find this treasure. And when we find the treasure, all the things that scare us, I mean, I'm just thinking of the Wizard of Oz, all the things that scare us, all the things that we are fearful of, just melt away because we found this holy grail, this holy something in our center of our being. And it's the backdrop premise behind every enchantment tale and legend is that. So that's what spoke to me.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you. Pamela, please.
Um, I heard the fear of failure. And with some new spaciousness in my life, I'm trying new things. And I have observed that fear of failure, of not coming with beginner's mind or the curiosity of a child. And just thinking I should be able to do things perfectly. And someone asked me the other day, it's through another adventure I'm on, what would you do if you had no fear of failure? And although I think that's a great question, and I am exploring different things as a way of seeing myself differently, I think the better question is, who would I be without fear? Who would I be without fear? And both of those questions are intertwining for me right now.
Yes, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pamela. Indeed. Cynthia, please.
Yes, the image spoke to me, and I felt like also the reading was a continuation of that prayer that you read to us, Mary, and before we begin, about taking everything that's hurt and maimed and damaged and transmuting it. And in this picture, I felt like that the angel, you know, was embracing the man, the woman, and also they're both standing on the lamb, say, which is an offering that we give of these things in ourselves to give them up. And you know, the spirit coming down into that which is material and transmitting it into that which is holy and light and a cosmic, which stands for our heart there in the chalice. So yeah, it was beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you. That was beautiful, Cynthia. David, please. Good evening, David.
Good evening. I experience this as a reminder of how far we've come from the Old Testament to the New Testament. So the message of Jesus, this psalm is, after all, an Old Testament an Old Testament message, basically, which emphasizes things like look not on my past mistakes and forgive what binds me in fear. Well, Jesus's message is that was then and this is now, and forget all that. You do not need to worry about those things. So there are positive things in this, obviously, looking at the aspirations of my heart and radiating love and all. But our understanding and the gift that we've been given is that these are already true. And now we still have residues of Old Testament fears and concerns and all that our culture has, and many of our religious elements have perpetuated, but that's not really the message for us today. The message for us today is these things are already forgiven, and we are invited, with the help of the conscious circle of humanity and all, to live this way, to live this truth from this moment on without having to ask for forgiveness, etc. So in a way, this psalm is inviting us to recognize what a marvelous gift we've been given, and how, as Bernadette says, we're being taught to be who we really are and forget those fears and old lessons about how corrupt we are and how weak we are, etc. And let us just celebrate and practice, with the help that we that is available to us, practice this new message.
Amen, David. Amen. And what a perfect segue as we continue our journey into the passions and our sharings and our discoveries about those passions. And so I'm very pleased to introduce again Bev McCune, who will facilitate our journey this evening. Beverly, welcome.
Thank you, Marianne. Hi, everyone. So my body right now is already in our topic for tonight of fear. I'm feeling that. I'm really not feeling apathy at all. But be that as it may, oh well, moving on. Apathy was an interesting exploration this past week, wasn't it? I had questions about what is the connection with moving center causing apathy when the body doesn't feel well. It's very easy to feel apathetic. I also saw that there's a big connection between apathy and laziness, and sometimes it's hard to tell the difference between the two. So we will take a look at the homework from last week, and I'm really interested to hear what you have to say. So we were invited to look at the level of apathy in Dr. Hawkins' map of the levels of consciousness, and to verify it through the lens of our own life experiences. So look back on the periods of apathy we've had, you know, what led to them, how did they manifest, and how we moved up the scale of consciousness from them and out of them, and to see which of the practices spoke to us and how they would have been in those situations helpful, or how they could be helpful in the future. And if you were having some apathy, to put on one of them as an exercise. And then also invited to use the map of the scale of consciousness as a tool of moving up the levels of consciousness out of apathy or any other negative emotion. And then our June practice, wonderful practice of grounding, of walking in the grass on the earth in bare feet, to feel that energy. So I'm real interested to hear what you found this week. So I invite you to raise your hand to share. Think of Kathleen, please.
Thank you. Hi, Bev.
Hi.
So during class last week, I heard a message that said, apathy nips at my heels. And I pondered that, and it became very clear to me, but also kind of surprising to me that I never looked at things this way before. So I am a 3 on the Enneagram, which is the achiever. And so I'm very goal-oriented and task-focused. And when I was a teenager, I missed a year of high school because I was in a psychiatric hospital for almost that whole year, more in than out. And then when I was 23 and I had my first child, I had severe postpartum depression that wasn't diagnosed and wasn't treated, and really, you know, went on for about a year maybe. And there was a point at which, one, I looked at that child and said, I'm not going to leave this child without a mother. And I need to figure something out. And part of the message that I gave myself, I think now, is if you keep swimming, you won't sink. And so I kind of learned to have goals and have small successes and set things. And I worked my way out of it. And one of the things I love about the Gurdjieff work and his concept of chief feature is how something has both a positive and a negative side, because it saved me. And I worked my way out of that, and I did not get, I haven't been depressed again since. But what I realized after the class is that I have an eye that says it's a slippery slope and you could fall back into being apathetic. And that a lot of my achieving and accomplishing is based on a fear of being apathetic. Mm-hmm. And even though I don't believe that in any way, I really don't believe I would fall back into that. But it just really was an epiphany all week. And I got so much energy from seeing it. It just, I think this week's email says something about shining a light on it and letting it go. I really felt like I was able to say, yeah, I don't need that. Why is that still there? That doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. And when I tried to kind of validate, do I really think that? I thought about times when I get sick or I'm just low energy for some reason, that's when I hear that voice. It's like, oh yeah, you're going to feel this way from now on. You know, this is just the beginning of, you're going to fall into this pit and you won't get out.
Yes.
And so I'm incredibly thankful for this week and this exercise.
Good. Well, thank you. Yeah. To me, it's amazing how children can move us out of ourselves. That was part of that care for other people, knowing that this being depends on me. Mm-hmm. You know, that's big motivation. And yeah, and who are we without all that, those thoughts, you know?
Yeah. And a lot of the exercises in the email, I recognized that I somehow discovered those, mm-hmm. of set a goal and then succeed at that, and I'll feel good that I did that. And even if it's just do the laundry, you know, or do this next thing or whatever.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you for that. Yeah. We don't much look at apathy. You know, it's mm-hmm. not a word you hear much these mm-hmm. days. And so it's a very fruitful exploration for sure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Gay, please.
So I experienced some apathy this week and actually the week before. And I, when it was going on, even in spite of the fact that it was our lesson for the week, I didn't recognize it. this has been somewhat of a pattern, particularly in my earlier life, of the difficulty in making a decision, the difficulty in making a move. It seems as if I feel like I need to get every piece of information together before the decision can be made and the move out of apathy. So what happened this last week, a week and a half, I got into some pretty significant physical discomfort, pain even. And my tendency over the years has been to use alternative therapies rather than traditional medicine. Steve and Todd, please forgive me. That's been what's been happening in my life. So I was running through all the possibilities. I should do this. No, I shouldn't do that. And all the while, I was really I was really suffering, not necessarily from the physical pain, but from the emotional pain and from the feeling of just stuckness and apathy, of course. And so when I finally made a move, made a decision to call two of my physicians and make an appointment, even though I hadn't been to see them, something lifted. It was just that that action that I took. I took action. I made a move. The energy itself from that moment on was raised.
Yes.
So I hope to remember that in the future. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, that's my experience, that you just the get in that inertia and then the just the indifference about and it's just taking the next step, doing one thing, and that often does move us. It's more energy. It's bringing more energy to it. So thank you. Thank you. Who else? Rebecca, please.
Well, I like Gay, or maybe it was Kathleen, when the journey email came on the subject of apathy, and when we discussed it, it was like, well, that's so interesting because I am feeling far from apathetic at this time of life. But as I read the email, it was full of nourishment for me. And I don't have it in front of me. Usually I like to have it because I like to refer to quotes in it. But one thing I remember is that, you know, I was reading along and it was sort of like the only way you can get out of apathy is with will. And I read that sentence and I was like, oh, well, that's not, if it was will, that's what you don't have when you're apathetic. And then I kept on going and it was like, and it can be transcended to the divine will. And that was like, okay, I get that. And I loved reading the various suggestions that were made about how to deal with apathy. And I thought back, as was suggested, to a particular time when my apathy was so deep, it felt like the closest to depression that I've ever felt. And I don't feel, you know, I'm not a person who has had to suffer much from that. But in a more current application, I realize that I have really been struggling with apathy towards my spiritual practice. I come to the work class most of the time. I have a work partner, but in turn, I just have felt apathetic about my spiritual practice. And I don't know if just seeing that was the thing that was the tipping point, but ever since I saw that, and it also had to do with the fear and resentment we talked about the week before, but I just had this newly found excitement about my spiritual life and about the work. And, you know, there's it's sort of like I realized I could not change. I could not achieve more enthusiasm for my spiritual practice by thinking about things in terms of I should be, you know, getting up and having my, you know, 20 or 30 minutes of silence. I should be, you know, reading the work. I should be, you know, and it was, I just felt so weighed down by all that. And I'm just not sure, something about the last couple of weeks just turned me around. And it was like, I need to be excited. I need to be, I need to view this as an adventure. And it really has been such an uplifting change for me, because basically, you know, without having all of a sudden turned into this person who has the perfect spiritual practice and does everything that I think is a good idea, it's like I wake up in the morning and I think, all right, it's God and me out on this adventure in life, and yay, I wonder what educational opportunity I'm gonna have today. And isn't it great that, first of all, God needs me in order to experience it, and I need God in order to deal with it. Mm-hmm. So it's at this moment, I can just tell you that I feel quite uplifted by what we've been studying and the way and the effect it's had on me.
That's wonderful. I love the recontextualization you made of it. That's the shoulds are so they're so depressing. they don't help us at all. And who's saying we should? No, and those are great to question, to use inquiry on, and then who am I without those shoulds? Mm. Then other possibilities open up. Like you said, a recontextualization, I see it in a new way. Yeah. That's wonderful. Yeah, and that it energized you, totally changed it for you. Thank you. Thank you. And you did mention depression. I did want to point out that it's from apathy we can slide into depression. And Dr. Hawkins actually puts actual depression down at the bottom level with shame. That's where depression sits in the map of consciousness, right at the bottom. And so apathy and depression, those are two different things, you know, in a lot of ways, although we can, maybe mild depression would be up in apathy, but I mean, that's how he puts it. I can kind of feel into that as a little different. So. Anyway, yeah, go ahead, Rebecca. Oop, you're muted still.
Right.
Yeah, there you go.
And I remember there being something in one of the last 2 weeks' emails about if we're experiencing apathy, or maybe it's anger and resentment, I think it was apathy. We have lost our faith. We have lost our faith in God and the divine life which we've been given. And I thought that was key. And I also paid a lot of attention to sometimes the way apathy, or at least a touch of apathy affects me, is there's so much to do, I think I'll lie down and not do any of it because I just can't get it all done. And and I loved the suggestion that was in there about honoring our need for self-care, you know, sort of the divine blessing on play.
Yes.
As self-care. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you, Rebecca. Steve, please.
I'm unmuted now, right?
Yes. You can hear
me? Okay, good. I never really spent a lot of time in those lower realms. You know, there's outsized sense of guilt and shame sometimes as a one, just being self-critical. But with Tom's accident, you know, and I hit grief, and there's this grief has a downward pull. You know, when you get into those lower levels, there's a downward pull, and it's the analogy would be in a pool that a swimming pool that has a 12 feet depth, and you jump in and you go all the way down, and you'll hit whatever the bottom at that level it is, and that pushes you back up. And at apathy was a level that I just refused to stay at. And it pushed me up. And I think that the level above that pulled me up is courage, because grief is something that you have to learn to surf rather than just live in. Because you discover that inner buoyancy that won't let that take over. Mm-hmm. And you have to nurse it along. You have to live with it. There's a certain level of acceptance, the acceptance level too. But I think the courage level, it takes courage to grieve with intention. And the other thing is I thought, you know, apathy, when I looked at the tonal scale, I've been looking at this more closely, David Hawkins stuff, and it's like apathy and neutrality sort of seem similar, and they're different, fully different levels. Yeah. But it's like different ways of saying whatever.
Yes.
The apathy way is whatever, and the neutrality way is, well, whatever.
Yeah.
So it's a certain level of acceptance and get along. And then my exercise of walking, and is right after the rain. We have nice zoysias, freshly cut zoysia.
Nice.
And that was, I really felt, is it Rusty that walks barefoot all the time? I have such tender feet. I would love to do that more, but I did feel connected. So good. Thank you,
Steve. Thank you for your openness there. David, please.
There we go.
Yeah.
Hi, Beth.
David.
Yeah, this subject is like others I think have said, is not something that I have really given much thought to. Even if I had, I don't think I would have even for a moment thought that it applied to me all that much, because I've always been a very active person. But as I was reading about it, it was really a profound revelation to help explain a lot about David and how I've lived my life, especially as somebody else said, the earlier part of my life, I think that was Gay, you know. So what I saw was how much, again, in like my late teens and into my 20s, really that whole decade of my 20s, there was a real kind of giving up on life and on myself, even though I kept going. And I think there was a mild depression there. But again, I'm such an active person, and that I just kept going, and yet I remember so clearly having thoughts, and even, you know, I would hear myself say these things in my own head of, oh, you'll never be like that. You'll never get that, you know. And it was what was the word? The process was abdication. Mm-hmm. In the map of consciousness, abdication. I was abdicating myself to life. Mm-hmm. And it really wasn't until around 30 or so that I started to wake up and something shifted. I had a profound experience that was very heart opening. And after that, things really started to change. And yet even now I can feel how, and I can see how apathy is, it's like these breaks that are always on a little bit. Mm-hmm. And sometimes more than a little bit, in all kinds of ways, you know. And I see how it's connected to that. There's fear. For me, at least, there's a lot of fear underneath the apathy or driving the apathy. And another connection was with the sexual energy and how that creative life force of the sexual energy, you know, that hydrogen 12 is really dampened by apathy. Yes, yes. It's just like a wet blanket over it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good observation. Yes. Thank you, David. Thank mm-hmm. you. Bonnie, please.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm at the point in my life where I have had a lot of changes, and I've gone through grief with both sets of parents and grandparents and a lot. And retirement, as has been said by other people, I am a very active person, and the idea of apathy didn't really seem to apply until I started to realize I was almost overwhelmed, in fact, was overwhelmed by what do I do next? What step do I take? I have so many choices, but can I do any of this? And I have so many things, where do I go? It led me to almost a deep challenge in myself and a kind of a good anger to move forward in my way. I had friends that were going through a lot, and I pushed myself. Actually, I went inside myself spiritually, and that spiritual will. I wrote cards to others. I made myself go out with my pets. I made myself do things that were actually difficult to do, to feel and get past that apathy, and taking one step at a time, just the feeling of helping people. And it still does. And every time I feel like there's something that is disturbing or is not letting me move forward, I take out my piece of paper and my pencil, or I go call someone that needs something. And that gets me out of the apathy and a bit of anger, like I think Billy was talking about last week, to get past something, to move ahead, you have to, there's a little bit of that that's good. And that's what I have been using. And that has helped me move forward in my career changes and getting past some of this grief and apathy.
Great. Wonderful. Yeah, that was a wonderful illustration of the map of consciousness and moving up it, and being able to move out of that dense state. So yes, thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you to everyone that shared. That was very, it sounds like it was a surprising exercise or a thing to look at for this week that many of us didn't necessarily see it. So that's it's valuable for sure. All right, so moving into our topic for tonight, fear. Luckily, my body's not feeling that now. Amen. Woohoo. I'm going to go right to the map of consciousness. We can see that. So last week, we were down here, okay, at apathy, this hopeless state, very dense energy at level 50. So today we're moving up two steps to fear, the fear at level 100. So it might seem a little weird that it's higher up, but if you feel into that, that energy of apathy again, that inertia, the heaviness, and then feeling into fear, there's quite a different feeling to it, isn't there? And I'm also going to go straight to the dualities of fear that David Hawkins lays out in his book, Transcending the Levels of Consciousness, because that gives you, it gives us a good picture of the characteristics of fear, because we're all very familiar with fear, I think. So, and it's interesting how he really delves into it. There's this excitement of danger. Okay? You can kind of feel that. You can panic, overreact, and in that dramatize the situation, emphasize it, want to gain attention in the sense of, you know, telling everybody about it, getting help, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but we're not, as he says, being self-sufficient when we could be. It's all obviously all about survival. The Father Keating's programs for happiness, right? Survival is one of those. Protection and control is a big one. When we're in fear, we feel like we're losing control. And oftentimes we're not in control. And obviously we're not in control ever, but in situations where we're fearful, we really feel it. There can be a lot of emotionalism. In other words, the rogue elephant of the emotional center takes over, right? And whereas really in that situation, we should be thinking rationally, but we can't. The emotions just whoo, take over and activate the moving center as well. We can exaggerate. And these are the big ones. We're in imagination. Worst case scenarios come up, no matter what's happening in the moment. We project to a future. We're not living in this moment. And the imaginations tend to proliferate. We see enemies. So when we're fearful, we can be othering big time. We tend to resist, defend, and avoid fear, feeling it. We don't want to accept it. We push it away. It's very uncomfortable. We elaborate, we escalate it, we harbor it instead of working through it. We justify our fears. We project the cause out there. The focus can become death, all right? And because underneath almost every fear is the fear of death of one kind or another, then we're really seeing death as the end of everything instead of seeing life, as he says, is eternal, because we're identified as a body. We focus on the body and we see life as physical, right? When we're identified with our bodies. These are some other fears: loss of youth, money, possessions, loss of love of others. Okay. And then, we really could use that image from last week of apathy as well. It's this cocooning. We're in this cocoon of fear where it's about us. We forget about God. We don't trust in God. Our vision becomes like a pinhole which reminds me of a teaching I once heard that said, usually our what we can see, like the possibilities, solutions, all that, our possibilities that we usually can see in a normal state is like a radar screen that's 3 inches in diameter, where it's 99.9999% of all possibilities are outside our radar screen normally. So when we're in fear, we are shut off to all possibilities, to higher centers, to help from above, because we're stuck on the horizontal. So we're gonna actually do a little exercise now. And so Karen is going to open up the chat feature. And if you would like to, and you have access to a keyboard, I'd like you to just write in the chat, which is now down at the bottom of your screen, there should be a little icon that says chat. And you click on that, and it says at the bottom, type message here. You don't have to change anything. It's going to go to everyone so we all can see it. Just type in quickly, we're just gonna take a couple of minutes here, type in your either recurring fears that you have, 1 to 3. We don't need all of them. just type in your fears and we'll just, anchor them outside ourselves. Okay, we'll just take a couple of minutes to do that. Fear of being unlovable, that I'm alone, self-sufficiency, fear of running out of financial reserves, of driving, fear of not getting everything done, that I can't take care of myself, loss of job and income, fear of abandonment, fear of dropping into depression again, fear of failing, fear that I don't matter, not being liked, rejection, dying with regrets, being wrong, that's one. Failure, looking bad, death, needles. People won't like me if they know me. Fear of exposure, right? Fear of what to do next, alone, abandoned, not doing enough, finance, relationships, health, fear of apathy, loss of children, ooh, yeah. Loss of health, suffering, not doing it right, fear of not having enough, dying alone, homelessness. I mean, look at all these fears. So just if you're there, just scroll through them. Okay. Yeah, there's so much that we fear. So just keep those in mind. And Karen's going to close off the chat for now. And I'm going to go back to sharing my screen. So just a few more characteristics of fear. We can feel that even in all the fears we put down, that there's scale in them. If we look at all our fears, there's certainly scale. From just mild anxiety about, my hair looking bad on a certain day, to, full out terror and dread and panic, right? So like any other of the passions, there's always scale involved. So what happens in our centers? So in the moving center, fight or flight reaction happens, right? The adrenaline starts pumping, our heart starts beating fast, our palms get sweaty, can start shaking, our breathing gets very, very erratic and shallow, which is what I've always experienced with being a musician. It's terrible. It's always been the thing for me. It's very incapacitating. Those reactions. The emotional center. Now, the language of the emotional center is images. So what does the emotional center create? It creates these images, these worst case scenarios. It creates these false realities, right? Imagination images. And the body cannot tell the difference between imagination and imagined just images and reality. Just think how you feel if you go to a scary movie or a tense movie. Doesn't your body react the same way? You could close your eyes, you can look down at yourself sitting in the chair and you're fine, but your body is still reacting, right? Body can't tell the difference. The intellectual center, it's chaotic, it's confused, it's hard to think. The image that comes up for me is of screaming children running all around in every direction. It's like another rogue elephant, which, you know, combine that with the rogue elephant of the emotional center and forget it, you know, that it's just go down the drain. So, and then also some of us can have a view of God as punitive. That's what he puts, Hawkins puts at this level too. I'm being punished. I deserve to be punished. I'm going to be punished for doing something, you know, wrong, whatever our fear is. So that there's just this underlying fear that I'm going to be punished, which is interesting. Now, Madame de Salzman, Jeanne de Salzman, she talks about the roots of fear being actually egoic self-protection, that the ego or those eyes in us need to be something, and it's always something other than what we are in this moment, something other, something out there, and that creates a fear of being nothing. You can look at that, and just again, the need to be something creates a fear of being nothing. What am I if I lose my job? If I make a mistake and look stupid, I don't want to be that, you know? I'm afraid of being nothing. I want to be this, I want to be that. I don't want to be this, you know, this nothing. We see ourselves as nothing when we're unhappy with ourselves. And we're arguing with reality. Again, and we'll come back to this need to be something in a moment, but at the bottom of all of this, and really of all the fears, are identification with our thoughts and beliefs in any moment of fear or any other emotion, past or future. Especially with fear, it's projecting a future. We're not even in the present moment at all. And Madame de Salzman talks about this, where she says, is there really fear in a moment of danger, in that very moment? Is there really any fear? She says, it's not until the mind connects with an association of the past or a projected thought about the future that fear enters. It's very much like Byron Katie says, if you want fear and terror, get a future. And she also says, you know, in a moment of danger, you can run out of fear, or you can just run, right? You said feel the difference between those two, right? Very different, very different. So again, we're thinking and believing these things in the past, just these thoughts, and we're not in the present moment. And that's the important thing about being in the present moment. Then we can see there's really nothing wrong. So coming back to this need to be something, that also ties in with the quotes in the email from Thomas Merton. And he says this, we try to fill the void. This fear of being nothing is so big for us that we create these diversions in our life. Madame de Salzman calls them evasions. Okay. We create diversions to do anything but enter deeply into that internal life, that inner life that we tend to see as nothingness. You know, maybe we've all glimpsed our own nothingness when we pull away everything. And he says, so it takes a lot of spiritual courage to do that. And that, but once we do, and this is what we're doing with all the work that we do, we're delving into that, right? Into that darkness that we don't know about. Then he says, through a gift of God, which he says St. Thomas calls the fear of God, then we have a moment where we actually see that that emptiness is not a vacuum, as he says, but it's fullness. It's all full. It's a fullness of divinity. It's a fullness. It has all those possibilities there. And then Thomas Keating talks about the fear of God. And he says that that's just a technical term for really awe, wonder, and reverence, this feeling of awe before the divine. And he calls this the gift of reverence. When that grows, as that grows, our trust in God grows. And as our trust in God grows, then our fears tend to dissipate. So it's a beautiful connection between reverence and our fears and our trust in God and the lessening of our fears. So I'm gonna stop there. Does anyone have any comments or questions they would like to, right? Yes, Pamela, thank you.
One of my favorite quotes from the email today was from Madame de Salzman, and it's where she says that our fears become obstacles, or she calls it destruction of our possibility to be.
Yes.
And I thought that was very powerful. It was a very motivating statement to me to really relook at fear.
Yes.
Because to me, that's the terror of the situation.
Literally.
What is standing in the way of just being?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah,
so I loved that.
Me too. Me too. And you can really feel into it, you know, exactly. Especially when I'm fearful. I'm just shut off completely from anything.
Right. It's very discarnate. Yes. Fear is very discarnate. So when I read that statement, it's really saying that fear is an obstacle to incarnation.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay. Well, we'll look at some ways to transform our fears.
Beverly?
Yes.
Deborah Jean had her hand
up. Oh, okay. Sure. Absolutely. Ah, go ahead, Deborah.
There we go. Is that better?
There, I can hear you.
There we go. this was a perfect time, one of those weeks that was perfectly timed. So Monday, I got back a PET scan that they finally let me have. And I had, Sunday I was agitated. I was in the future. I was out of body a lot. And I was in my head, what's gonna happen? How bad is it? By Monday morning, I was really agitated and really had a hard time in centering prayer, quieting myself. And I had a little meltdown one day. I think it was on Friday, I had a meltdown, which I haven't had for a long time. So it was like, whoa, there she showed up, you know, like a temper tantrum, kind of my little 2-year-old temper tantrum, things aren't going my way. And so I was kind of watching myself through the week, and you know, that's not I just, you know, stepping back from it. And so when we went, my son went with me, and I told him, I need you to be there because I feel really fragmented, and I feel really scared. And we walked in, and the results were worse than either of us had predicted. And as I sat there, and as she kind of went over what the PET scan said, I felt really calm. And I found that curious, because all of a sudden all the future stuff stopped. It just was right then, right now, right here. This is it. And you know, we discussed some options for palliative care and things like that, which my son, I think, wants me to do that. And we're probably going to try some palliative things. I have one tumor that's kind of working its way through my chest wall. It's really causing some pain. And so maybe they can shrink that up a little bit and then give me a little bit longer to just get some things finished in my life. And I just found it so curious that not knowing, my brain just goes on overtime and starts creating those futures. So when I was reading this today, I went, that's exactly what happened. And I loved what I read today, which really hit me, that when it said, this limiting view is created by the ignorance of world 48, which cannot see the divine justice is innate and autonomous as a consequence of creation itself. In addition, the overall omnipresence of allness includes ever-present options for salvation. And what I realized, oh, there's my puppy leaning her head up on my head, that every moment of this life is a life, it is an opportunity for healing, is an opportunity to allow God to enter and allow God to have that calmness and that stillness, and that all is fine. And it's just everything turned around again, all the spinning and the head banging and all that stuff that was going on. And it's just been this incredible peace all week, and deep gratitude, a lot of gratitude. Mm-hmm. And I guess the sense for me is that really what our lives are, these gifts, are our chance to heal the human condition towards God's allness.
Yes.
Towards all that is and that ever will be. And there's nothing else that's real. I'm not real in and of myself. I'm all those crazy little eyes running around. I'm up the children screaming.
Yes.
I really was screaming. And it just is this still joy and pure goodness. I wrote a poem some years ago after my dad died, and the last line was about, you know, that where we end up is in this sort of unmarked grave, right? The home of souls. And it's not about my name, and it's not about the accomplishments in life. It is about the relationship to God that I'm coming home to. And that this moment is the opportunity to heal.
Yes.
Anyways, I'm just very grateful. And by the way, I got to go to church on Sunday, and it was so wonderful to be with you all. It just was so much more beautiful than I had imagined in my brain. And thank you all for working on yourselves and giving me moments to heal, moments to step forward into God. Mm-hmm. The presence in that church was it's just absolutely incredible. It's a home I never found before, mm-hmm. and not on this planet.
<That's>
Thank
wonderful.
You. Blessings
Thank
all.
Thank you so much, Deborah.
Thank
so
you.
So appreciate your wisdom. Keep sharing it with us. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Really beautiful. Thank you. Okay. Wow. A beautiful testament. Okay, so transforming fear. Some possibilities. Dr. Hawkins has a very interesting exercise called And Then What? Where you take a fear, like I'm going to lose my job. Well, and then what? Well, I won't have any money. And then what? On and on and on and on until you get to the core fear, which for most people, really, that fear of any, at the bottom of all fears is a fear of death. And that you surrender that core fear to God. And that, yes, just give it up. And then he also says that, like with apathy, acceptance is a step we have to take. We have to accept that we're feeling fear. We're not trying to avoid it. We're not trying to push it away, to make it go away. We're accepting it. And then to really feel into the experience. So the welcoming prayer is a perfect practice for it. To drop into the body, to feel, to breathe through all those sensations, to welcome the divine presence with you in that situation. To me, that's, for me, that's the only way I can stay in the present moment, is by dropping in the body and just accepting and feeling the sensations. Because it's very physical. Fear is very physical for me. And I'm very aware of it. And in the past, I've always wanted to just get out of it in whatever way, say my affirmations, do this, do that, do that, do. No. It's like Pamela was saying, Madame de Salzman, it keeps us from this, our ability to be, just to be here right now in the moment. And so the surrendering, he says, active surrender to God's will. I hear that as just, we have to constantly, it's not a one-time thing. We just have to constantly surrender to God's will. Okay, not my will be done, but thine, thy will be done. And that we consciously choose alignment with divinity and truth. Madame de Salzman talks about vigilance in the sense of that we have to become conscious of our fears. We have to do our observation, self-observation, really delve into this, become conscious of the fear and not resist it. Same as Dr. Hawkins. And that we have to see clearly through all the desires of that wanting to be something, all those ambitions we have. And then she says, again, this attention to the present moment. She says, when we're in some other thing, it's inattention, which I'd never thought of quite that way. Bringing our attention to the present moment, that's when we can be, right? And this idea of the I know versus the I don't know mind, when we're in fear or any kind of imagination, when we're thinking and believing something, we're thinking we know. We're thinking we know. I had a situation one time where I got triggered by a past memory of being on a Girl Scout camping trip and being getting caught on the edge of a tornado. Years later, in fact, it was just a few years ago, that association drove me to drag my husband and my cats in the closet under our stairs. But then my lack of attention, I was in these worst case scenarios where it was going to blow the house over. We were going to, you know, the stairs were going to crush us at death. I said, you know, so that's the I know mind. I'm thinking I know, but being now, to be, as Madame de Salzman says in that quote, we find we don't know. And then we get to see reality. We get to be. And then also self-inquiry on a future image or thought is very useful, where you really go to your worst fear as if it's happened. For me, my worst fear is one of my grandchildren dying on my watch. It's just, that's my worst fear. So what is that fear? I want to question. Well, is it really fear of her dying? Is that the fear? I mean, yes, I can question someone, they will die on my watch. They could die on my watch. I would question, I would write a whole list of thoughts. My children will hate me. I can never forgive myself. I'm going to want to kill myself. You know, all those thoughts, you go right to it and you question it down to the truth that you don't know. There's really no way to know how things would end out. And so we are out of time. The homework is pretty self-explanatory. Yeah, we've often said that when we started these passions, then it shows up the next week. Well, let's work it. If a lot of fear shows up, so be it. So blessings on your week of work. Marianne?
Thank you so much, Bev. So much to take in there. So much food for us. Thank you. So a closing word from our friend Rodney Collin. When instead of saying, I feel so lazy today, we turn out lethargy into positiveness by saying, I will do something to get out of this, we find that we have more energy than if we gave into it. We must try to convert our negativeness into positiveness, to make everything positive by our wish, by our strength, by our efforts. If there is one person depressed in a gathering of people, he could make everyone else depressed too. But if we come in and say to ourselves, this cannot go on, I am strong, I can change this by being positive, the atmosphere in the room will change. Whatever is strongest affects whatever is weakest. A crowd can be on the verge of a panic, and one person, by projecting confidence, can stop it. In a group of people who are trying to work, one person can raise the whole level. We can never make the excuse that there are some in the group that keep the whole on a low level, because one person, just one person, can change the rest. And so it is. So let us join in closing and affirming the prayer of God's ever-present love. God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully, and how blessed I am to simply remember God. Protect us, Lord, while we are awake, and watch over us as we sleep, that awake we may keep watch with Christ, and to sleep, rest in Christ's peace. Amen.